Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
She's the woman that loves me so, say,
it is the Savage Nation. Well, let's hear the music. I don't even want to talk about Obama right now. I played a little loud. It's Friday. Rock and roll Friday. We got through another horrible week. Obama dragging us by the neck into the neo-Marxist nation of the new Venezuela. You think I'm being, you know, I'm doing hyperbole. You're wrong. A lot of people earn a real living. Do you realize that the upper 2% of earners pay 50% of all income tax in America? Do you realize what Obama's doing by appealing to the lower income people or the no income people? By appealing to the lowest common denominator, it is very simple to get yourself reelected. It has been done by dictators in the past. It is not really the way to run a country, because ultimately the productive citizens stop producing. There's no point in making an investment if you're not going to get a return on your investment. You look at any restaurant, you look at any business, whether it's a guy who opens up a hardware store, or opens up a drapery store, or whatever the service is, he's got to take a risk. It's called risk capital. That's capitalism. So he or she says, you know what, I'll invest $100,000, $90,000 of my hard-earned money. And if I buy this, that, and the other thing, I'll provide services. Maybe I'll make $50,000 a year, or whatever the numbers may be. Now, why would somebody make that investment if they're only going to be punished and have to give up the potential profits, should they make any, to a bunch of deadbeat bums who don't even belong in the country? Because a good portion of this money is not going to go to American poor. It's going to go to illegal alien poor. I don't think you understand how bad this really is, but when you look at the level of demagoguery coming out of the mouths of people like Turban Durbin, Dick Durbin, who, by the way, should be focused upon very carefully, since he is now running with the football of totalitarianism, and that he wants to kill talk radio because he has something to hide, obviously. I've noticed that those who have the most to hide are the ones most loudly calling for the return of the unfairness doctrine. For example, Dianne Feinstein. She's richer than God. Her and her husband have made fortune upon fortune. What is it that she is so worried about that I might say that she wants me silenced? You have to ask yourself these questions. Now, having said that on the show today, I want to go all the way back. I want to back up and not get overly excited for a couple of reasons. One, because I'm not going to. Two, because I don't want to. And three, because it's unnecessary for me to make my points. My audience is secured. No matter how I do it, I could do it humorously. I could do it by yelling and screaming, or I could do it quietly, and you're going to listen anyway. That's why my audience is here. It's because of what I'm saying, really, almost not how I'm saying it, because you know I'm right. And even those of you who are on the other side of the aisle, you sense that I know what I'm talking about, and you want to get the opposite opinion to draw your own conclusion. So I'm going to now permit those of you who normally consider yourselves to be liberals to listen to what I'm about to say. I am seeing criticism of Obama on a regular basis coming from the Republican Party. And you'd expect this. But it's nothing that I didn't predict would happen. For a year, I was grousing that Bush was spending us into oblivion, that Bush wouldn't win a war that should have been won 5 years ago, et cetera, and so on. And I said the Republicans have ceased to criticize him because they're rolling in pig dirt. They've never had it so good. As long as the money's flowing in, they're not going to criticize Bush. And I said, wait until you see when Bush loses. I mean, when Bush is gone and a Democrat wins, if that should happen. Wait till you see the Republicans who have been silent for the last 2 or 3 years are suddenly going to start screaming about all the issues that they used to be, you know, concerned about. And here they are again, conservative Congress somewhere in Washington, the usual suspects giving the usual speeches about we've got to stop big government. Where were they when Bush was spending us into oblivion? Where were they when Bush was spending and creating a government bigger than the previous four administrations put together? I was here. I've always been a fiscal conservative because I started with nothing and I don't want to end up with nothing. And I want you to remember something. I created the phrase trickle-up poverty during the campaign. I tried to get McCain to use it. I knew he could have sunk Obama with that line. He didn't want to do it for obvious reasons. The old man didn't want to win. He was a fall guy. He was set up to fall. They wanted a Democrat to win so they can continue the move towards the one-world government, in my opinion. And so McCain, the front man, the strange Manchurian candidate like McCain, did not use trickle-up poverty. But that's exactly what Obama's doing. He's making trickle-up poverty occur. Not immediately, but that's what he intends to do. And he's got to be stopped because it'll kill the economy totally. Try to envision Eastern Europe before the collapse of the wall. Try to envision a butcher store in Poland pre-Glasnost. Try to envision people lined up around the block with one salami hanging in the window. That's where we're going to go. I don't mean tomorrow. Now you say, well, how could that happen? What you don't seem to understand are the basics of economics. I will repeat them to you. Why should a butcher... No, let's go back to the farmer. Why should a farmer raise a pig if the government is either going to make the cost of raising that pig prohibitive either with red tape regulations or with taxation when he has such a slim profit margin to begin with that it becomes unworthwhile to raise that pig or that cow? And you go all the way up the line to the butcher. Why should the butcher invest in buying meats for his store on credit when he may not be able to sell those meats? And so, therefore, the entire system starts to implode. And what you wind up with is one bologna hanging in a butcher store. Now, you say it can't happen here. That's because many of you were spoiled, and you grew up in the post-60s or post-70s America, where it was a land of plenty, and you never suffered for anything. You never really worked in your life. You came out of school and thought that the world would be your oyster. All you had to do was get high in order to get by. I listened to people looking for jobs. And what you hear them saying is, I networked and I couldn't find anything. Now, who are they networking with? Other people with pointy shoes seeking orgasms? They generally don't have any jobs for you, honey. And you have no skills. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean I'm putting you down. I'm just telling you, you're in a competitive world and there are no jobs for you. And if you think that by taxing the rich, that means anybody making... grossing more than $250,000, which we warned you about during the campaign, and Obama lied about during the campaign, you're going to deter people from making the investments necessary to build the economy. So I've said what I want to say on that issue, okay? There are a lot of other things I want to say, and I will say them in time. On my website, there's some great stories. From Machine Tools to Political Tools is really one of the best monologues of the week. And that was triggered by the fact that I was going through my tool cabinet the other day in my basement. And on the bottom, I found some tools that my father left for me. Not that he was, well, he didn't give them to me like, Dad, you know, here it is on your deathbed, here's a tool. No. He was a man who liked to work with tools in his basement. And he left me a bunch of tools. And they were kind of antique-y when he bought them. He bought them from some guy who died in New York. And they were already old. I picked one of these things up the other day. This thing was made of solid wood, a wood handle, not plastic. It looked as though it could have been used by Visigoths as weapons while raiding a coastal village in the 4th century. This tool it was built, in other words, for a life of work. The tool was built to last a lifetime, or the men of that day would never have bought it. Now, you know where I'm going already. You can read my mind. The tools of that time were built to last a lifetime. And something happened along the way, where now we have garbage being built to fall apart in a year or two so that you throw it away and buy a new one. And you wonder what that has to do with anything. Well, my monologue is from Machine Tools to Political Tools. Because in my opinion, we haven't had a real president built to last a lifetime in a very long time. George Bush was sort of a tool made to break down and throw away. He was laughed at for the last 4 years of his administration. But in the past, leaders spoke words that are still remembered today. Nothing that Obama has said will be remembered beyond the 24-hour news cycle. Nothing. Why? Why? Because Obama looks only at the short-term interests of his neo-Marxist supporters. He is ready-made to get them power, and I believe that they will replace him as soon as he served his usefulness. I'll be right back.
I'll always want you, because my heart is true. Come closer.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation, and I know you've all been waiting for this day, so you can be a lunatic on the weekend. Yeah, wild and crazy weekend. Who has a wild and crazy weekend anymore? How many years has it been since you had a wild weekend? The weekend comes, you don't know what to do with yourself. That's the thing. All week long, people work, work, work. Then what do they do on the weekend? I guess a lot of people do. They play golf or whatever normal people do. I don't know. Don't put me in that category. I don't know what it is to be that way. I mean, I just never knew. I was a caddy once. I'll admit it. I did like 4 in the morning in the golf course. Do you know I was a caddy when I was a kid? 14, 15. Flagler Hotel, South Fallsburg, New York. Actually, some of the most beautiful memories of my life is walking with that bag. That was pre-cart. That was before the carts on the golf course. Men had to walk. There was no noise, no pollution, no whirring, no buzzing. The men did it for exercise. All right. A guy likes it, he likes it. I never could understand it myself. It's like a British, you know, thing. People had nothing to do with themselves after they pillaged the colonies, and they came back to England. They knocked balls around in their estates, and it evolved into the game called golf. So the average man usually copies the aristocrats, you know, of one country or another. So that's a sport now that I guess everyone thinks they're a nobleman. But if you like it, you like it. I have nothing against anything people like. They're not hurting anyone. I personally can't enjoy it. It's too slow a game for me, frankly. Tennis is also too slow. I'm not saying you don't have to have great skill, but it's a slow game. Thinking is actually the fastest game on earth. How can anyone compare? Anyway, that's my own. It's going to rain again here. I'm in the West Coast. I'm not supposed to talk about weather. It's one of the rules of a national show is you can't talk about anything fun. Weather, can't do time because it's a national show. And got a day of sun today and tomorrow sun in the Bay Area. God, the San Francisco Bay is so gorgeous. After the rain out here, the sun comes out, you could scream it's so gorgeous. You know, it's going to rain again Sunday now for another week, which is great because I love all winter long. Drought, drought, drought. We have the driest winter on record, global bowl, you know, global warming, blah, 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 blah. Then it rains. All of a sudden, the crybaby starts screaming, hey, it's raining too much, but it's not filling up the reservoirs. The gangsters who own the water industry are telling you, you still got to worry so they can jack you up on the price. Everything's fear, fear-driven. They're swamped on the highways complaining about the wet, and they're still saying it's still a drought. Salmon aren't in, flying in, salmon aren't coming in through the gate to go spawn. That's like one of the saddest stories in the history of nature. I can't understand it. It's so Buddhist. It's such a Buddhist story. The salmon is hatched up in a river, the Sacramento River. Thing swims out through miles, Sacramento River, through the Golden Gate, goes out to the sea, goes up in the blah, 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 has fun. Then it wants to have a baby. It's got to swim all the way back. 3 years later, so it can shoot its sperm on the egg and die. What a way to live. I guess why the French call it the petite mort. I wouldn't relate it to locks, but maybe there is a relationship between the petite mort and locks. I don't really know. But what a tragedy to spend like all that swimming through all of that. You know, the bears don't get you. The fishermen don't get you. The pollution doesn't get you. The toxic condoms in San Francisco Bay don't get you. And you go and you wind up all the way back up at the top of the Sacramento River and you die after you spawn. What's that all about? Why does nature do that? Can anyone understand the survival value of that? Why? I don't understand it. I told you about the woman who went crazy when I was a kid in Queens about the whole thing about why are we born to die. I mean, I don't want to bum you out. I remember as a kid it scared me because he was the doctor. Everyone lived in an attached house in one block after another. See, we're all in the same income level. In those days, even in those days, a doctor didn't make much more than a little, you know, merchant. Yeah, okay, a specialist in a hospital made a little bit more, and a manufacturer made a little bit more, but the doctor didn't make that much more. He lived around other people in the same category, in the same kind of attached house. So he had a wife and the kids my age. And the wife was she went nuts, okay? I don't know how to put it. It's not funny. She cried all the time. Either she stayed in the house crying or she came out and cried. She took people's hands, even children. And she'd say, tell me, why are we born if we have to die? Why did God give me children if they're going to die one day? You know, it's frightening to a kid to hear that. So you go to your mother and say, like, why is Mary crying about that? And your mother doesn't know what to say because she can wind up in a, you know, like a tearjerker and not know what it's all about. There was no answer to it. There's no answer to that story. You have an answer to that story. That's why we're focused on politics, to make believe that we don't care about the eternal questions. This way we can get mad at the Republicans or Nixon. You can say Nixon did it. Or you can hate the Democrats that they did it. You don't have to face your own problem. You understand this? You want to talk about everything? You know, I'm going to talk about the economy again. Who do you think I am, Sean Hannity? You think I'm that smart that I only went to high school and going to talk about the economy? You think I'm Rush Limbaugh? You think I'm up at the level of a man who went to high school? I'm not there yet. I can't get up to that level of bashing only Democrats and the Republicans are such geniuses. I'm not ready to be smart enough to carry the water for the Republican Party. You'll have to forgive me. So I'll take some callers. KGIL, Larry, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. First of all, I want to thank you for sending me a copy of Psychological Nudity. It's a tremendous read.
It is. It is. I'm down to only about 900 and some odd copies again. So anyway, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling because, you know, Obama's policy towards Israel, a lot of people don't realize this, is really very, very different than George Bush's policy.
But wait, Larry, I'm glad you brought it up, but hello, how come 85% of Jews who allegedly support Israel voted for Obama? They didn't know what they were going to get? Did you see the article on Drudge yesterday that he posted about this is not the Hillary we knew? In other words, when she was a senator from New York, it was convenient to be Zionist, so she appealed to the Jews. Now suddenly she's a Secretary of State, she's appealing to the Arabs. What, they didn't know who Hillary Clinton was?
No, you're absolutely right, and she's not in the Senate anymore. It's a disgrace. And this.
No, she's Machiavellian. What, her and her husband are reliable characters? Her and Bill are reliable creatures to any community, let alone the Jews? But look, stand a line, Larry. This is a very big problem right now and a very big topic. Because, frankly, Israel's been written off by the Obama administration and the world. Israel is a nation alone right now. And we're going to talk about that on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
A white sport coat and a pink carnation. I'm all dressed up.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, I'm back. Yeah, you go up and down. You say, how long can you take this? People I know are freaked out with Obama. I mean, they really are frightened that he... I was walking around the mall the other day, okay? So I see two guys, middle-aged white guys, who are... Yeah, basically on the bottom of the social heap, you could see it. And one is saying to the other, they just read in a local newspaper, which is going bankrupt, that he's going to tax the rich, meaning the people who make more than $250,000. And one of them says to the other with a smirk, there's so few of them. There's so few of them. Just think. Right, less than 5% of the population earns $250,000 or more. But I think that they account for like 80% of all the tax revenues raised. That's something our loser friend in the mall doesn't understand, that the Castro-like social programs that he thinks he's going to benefit from under Obama will come to an end when the people who earn the money will stop earning the money. They don't get that part of it. But that's the problem with the country we're living in today. Let's go back to the callers. Larry, KGIL Country, Los Angeles. Welcome back to the program. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. First of all, the answer to your question about the 85% of the Jews... Liberalism is a mental disease.
We were talking about Israel. 85% of Jews who allegedly support Israel, a good portion of them, were warned not to vote for Obama. We warned them what he would be doing. And within a month, they're finding out we were right, and Hillary stabbed them in the back as well. Hey, they still haven't awakened yet to what liberalism does to them?
That 85% will never wake up. Michael, I went...
Well, look at my website on the bottom. There's a sad story. Eli Wiesel... who survives the Holocaust, gets wiped out by investing with Madoff. And they ask him, how could a guy as smart as you, who's been such horrors, how could you get taken in by this and so many other smart people? He has no answer. And I have the answer, though, Larry, and it's kind of an ugly answer, but I'll give it later on the show. Go on, please.
About Obama and the Middle East. Everything he is doing, from sending John Kerry into Gaza, talking to the Syrian government, dealing in the Durban Conference, Hillary with Gaza, Chaz Freeman, Samantha Power, Susan Rice. These are all vehement leftists. This is a very different president than George Bush. And this is not good.
But George Bush was the best friend Israel has ever had, given the circumstances, and yet the Jewish community hated him. Why is that? I'm going to say it right now, and I say it in a not very nice way. I'm going to say it without any invective. It's because most ethnic communities are somewhat racist. I will be very honest with you. And they would rather distrust a white male than anyone else on the planet. Do you understand that, Larry? You know that I'm telling you the truth.
Of course.
The fact of the matter is they have a greater antipathy toward the white male who is even protecting them than anyone else. What did they think? Because Obama was half black, he was going to be their friend?
Exactly.
Why?
Right.
Where did they get the idea that a man who's half black is going to love Israel? What made them believe that?
Because he wore a yarmulke in Sderot. He wore a kippah when he went to Sderot. And that's all that it takes for most of these 85% of those Jews.
Well, Larry, let's get down to brass tacks. You know, the Soviet Union cut off Cuba a long time ago as a sort of appendage because they couldn't afford to support Cuba anymore. Let's have realpolitik here. Now, if I have to choose between the Israelis and the Palestinians, I'll choose the Israelis because they're not a bloodthirsty bunch by nature. They'd rather avoid killing women and children, while the other side would rather kill women and children. They aim for women and children. But that doesn't mean I particularly like Israelis, nor that I particularly like Israel. Why should the United States continue, basically, to tie itself to Israel is the real question.
You want an answer for me?
I do.
I'll give you an answer. I've lived in Israel. One of Israel is a strong democracy in the Middle East. Even if it wasn't a Jewish state, it's a strong ally of the United States and represents United States interests throughout the Middle East.
Well, you see, I keep hearing that, and I'm going to have to take the other side. I know it's not an easy thing for you to believe I'm going to do. Where are they a strong ally? They haven't fought in one war going back to Gulf One. They were told to stay out of it to not provoke the Arabs. You hear this? So, well, where's the strong ally? We give them trillions of dollars in support and airplanes, and they don't use them. So where's the ally?
I'm sure the Israeli government would send military if asked by America. I'm sure America has never asked Israel to send troops to Iraq. They could find bin Laden in 2 days.
Well, do you really believe that? What, they're really still that good?
I guarantee you I believe it. I know.
Well, you mean they know where bin Laden is and they're not telling us? That doesn't sound too good.
I'm sure they know where he is, and I'm sure they are telling us.
Look, Larry, I don't want to make you uncomfortable here, and the greatest supporters of Israel in America are the fundamentalist Christians, who I am sorry to tell you have been lambasted by liberal Jews for too long right now. That's the part that actually hurts me more than anything to say. The fundamentalist Christian, who has been the most devout supporter of the state of Israel and Jewish people for as long as I can remember, have been dumped upon by the Hollywood left, by the Jewish left, and by the Jewish people in general. Why is that, Larry?
The reason, boy, you're brilliant, Michael. The reason for that is very simple. The reason is because most of the Hollywood left, the limousine liberals, the Berkeleyites, the Brandeisites, the University of Chicago billionaires types, are self-hating people. And the Christians, the fundamental Christians, of which I know thousands and thousands of them, are really, well, they understand what Israel, and some of them believe in some rather radical interpretations of the Bible.
I understand the whole thing, and I've heard Jews say, oh, they really don't like Israel. They just believe that the Jews are there until the second coming, and then they're going to turn on us. You talk about paranoia. You talk about ethnic paranoia. Here they have friends who are protecting them and supporting them and sending them money, and they look for an excuse to hate them. While the people who hate them, they look to find a reason to love them. Can you explain that to me? Yes. Liberalism is a mental disorder, Larry. When you can't answer questions, that fits, and it fits all. It's like one phrase fits all, Larry. Here's one that just came out, Larry, and everyone else in the Savage Nation. I have to watch my voice because I had a little laryngitis for 2 days. You're not going to believe this. Hollywood team in Iran on cultural exchange just came out minutes ago. A top-level team of, I should add, leftist morons, including Annette Bening, traveled to Iran on an NGO, non-government mission, for a weekend of cultural and creative exchange meetings, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences said Friday. How do you feel about that? That would be like sending Hollywood people to the Soviet Union during the 1930s while dissidents were being put into the Gulag Archipelago. Shame on you, Annette Bening. Shame on you. I never liked you and your fraudulent husband ever. But here's an example again. Washington is now moving towards Tehran, an administration that's put roadside bombs and killed our men, mutilated our men. They think a bunch of Hollywood leftists like Annette Bening, a piece of rotten guava on the Hollywood floor, suddenly her career is over. What did I tell you years ago in a semi-comedic manner? That when they're young and beautiful, they have everything to look forward to. And when their careers start to fall along with their derrieres, the last place for them to go is into leftist politics. It happened to Goldie Hawn. Remember her? Yeah, the real genius. But they all espouse radical leftist politics once their careers and their derrieres seek new lows. That's really what it comes down to. Hollywood team in Iran on cultural exchange. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Sean Penn, the moron, the fraud, the self-deluded fool, who is an excellent actor because he has no personality other than acting. Don't you think you understand this yet? Here's another thing you don't understand. Many of you confuse the actor with the person. The reason they're good actors is they fundamentally have no center. In fact, the less of a center that they have, the better the actor they can be. I'm not a good actor because I can't go out of character. I tried acting when I was in high school. I'll never forget it as long as I lived. I mean, I'm a theatrical kind of personality, but I can't act. I can only be me. They can act because there is no me. There's no thou. You got to read Martin Buber to understand what I'm saying. I and thou. There is no I nor thou. There's only them. You know what I'm saying? Whatever characters put into their head, they become. For example, so Sean Penn plays a together person in a movie. He can speak, he can talk, he can walk. He's together. But did you ever hear him speak when he's not on script? Like all over the map. Different voices, different inflections, different intonations. He's all over the map because there's many he's. They don't know who they are. And that's what I'm trying to tell you. So, now, how can you confuse a person like that with someone with an opinion that matters? They go and visit Chavez in Venezuela over and over again. What do they find appealing about Chavez in Venezuela? A man who nationalized the media. What do they find so appealing about that? Them and that dummy, Danny Glover. Well, what's so interesting about dictators that they are drawn to them? I once did a whole psychological analysis of why actors are drawn to dictators. And that's because they live in a world of total and absolute control. They are all fundamentally dictatorial in their nature because they are afraid to be reasonable with people. So they always revert and resort to terror tactics with everybody. I'm going to lay it out again to you. The big Hollywood stars are basically emotional terrorists. They terrorize everybody with their rotten attitudes, with their screaming and their yelling. And they do so because they don't have the, shall I say, the range to reason with people, to communicate with people. They can't do it. So they revert to being a dictator in their own little Hollywood world. Do it my way, or I'm not doing a movie. Do it my way, blah, blah, blah. So why are they drawn to a dictator? Because they have the same nature. You understand this? This is very important for you to understand. That's all. My throat's hurting me already. I got to suck on a candy now. Hey, speaking of sucking on a candy, the other day I watched the speech that Obama gave, this terrible speech, Tuesday, I think it was. Did anyone notice that Nancy Pelosi didn't stop sucking on a candy? What in the heck was that? I have never seen anything less dignified in my life. Every time I looked, she was either jumping up with a fixed smile, gesticulating madly, clapping, or sucking on something. Why? What is the sucking? Wait. Then I look in they keep panning to the audience. Everyone was sucking on something. There was Lieberman. Every time the camera went to them, it had something in their mouth. What is this thing? Like, it's like a fan. It's like lollipops in their mouth. What is this? Like a Kool-Aid candy they're sucking on? Some liberal candy that's passed out with some kind of drug in it that makes them look goofier than they are inherently? What's in that candy that they're sucking on? I wonder. But anyway, to get back to brass tacks here, we looked into Dick Durbin. Richard Joseph Dick Durbin is the Democrat Party whip, the second highest position in the Democrat Party. Durbin, who wants to end free speech in America, was born in East St. Louis to an Irish-American father, William Durbin, and a Lithuanian-born mother, Ann Kutkin. Okay. He earned a B.S. from the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown in 1966. That was the beginning of the suspicions. B.S. Durbin earned his J.D. from Georgetown in 1969, blah, 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 blah. Now, Durbin is the man who is so far to the left that he ranted against our troops, calling them the most horrible names imaginable. Guys, do you have the clip of Senator Turban Durbin?
Not only was the temperature unbearably hot, but extremely loud rap music was being played in the room and had been sensed the day before with the detainee chained hand and foot in the fetal position on the tile floor, end of quote. If I read this to you and didn't tell you that it was an FBI agent describing what Americans had done to prisoners in their control, you would most certainly believe this must have happened by Nazis, Soviets in their gulags, or some mad regime, Pol Pot or others, that had no concern for human beings. Sadly, that's not the case.
This now, that's the man, the most liberal senator in America, who wants to take away talk radio. I don't think you understand who he is. He hates the military, he hates the troops, and he hates the freedoms that your fathers died for. But he's hiding right now because the American media won't expose him for who he is. There's another article we found on old Dickie Durbin and his anti-Semitic rant. It was written by Joseph Farah. Joseph Farah is not Jewish. Joseph is an Arab, by the way. He's a good friend of mine, and he's a Christian Arab who knows exactly what's going on in the world. He's one of the smartest men in the media. And on June 20th, 2008, on WorldNet Daily, Farah wrote this. When I first wrote about Senator Dick Durbin's threat against anyone who dares to criticize what Michelle Obama says and does in campaigning for her husband, I focused on the absurdity of his damnation curse, in which he reserved the hottest ring in hell for offenders. What I neglected to notice was the anti-Semitic nature of his comment. And he goes on, and you have to see this. In the latter work, Dante reserves the deepest ring of hell for Giudecca, or La Giudica, or in plain English, the Jews. In Dante's native Italian, the name was Giudecca or La Giudica, the common name for the Jewish quarter of European cities from which they were forbidden to leave. Even the word ghetto is believed to be a derivation of this word for Jewish quarter. Is Dick Durbin conducting a subtle form of Jew baiting here, he asks. Joe, you're as sensitive as they come. I think Dick Durbin is the most dangerous man in the U.S. Senate, and I believe that his attempt now to destroy talk radio is based upon some very, very deep fears that his connections to the Chicago machine, his connections to Blagojevich, his connections to Obama, his connections to Burris will come out very soon, and they'll come out not in the local newspaper, the Detroit Unfree Press, but in talk radio. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My tears feel like rain.
It is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation. Mixture this and that with the week's events. But I, look, I'm not going to dwell on the things you already heard 8,000 times. You know, talk radio has changed so dramatically in the last 6 months, let alone the last 6 years, that the old formulas are not working, which is okay for me, because there's a lot more that we can talk about other than politics. So I try to introduce ideas, for example, which I threw out an idea before, which I left hanging. When I talk about actors, I mentioned a book called I and Thou by Martin Buber. Now, many of you don't know what I'm referring to. It used to be required reading when you went to college, when I went to college. Even to a city college in New York City, we had a great education. Ish und Du, meaning I and Thou, Martin Buber. I remember reading it. It was so hard for me to read. I had to read it 3 or 4 times to understand it, but I didn't go to the cliff notes. In fact, I wrote a paper on it. I got an A or whatever. It was the most frequently copied paper in Queens College history, the last I heard. It had been passed around for 10 years after under different names. People took it and rewrote it. I wish I could find that paper. Did anyone steal it from me and use it to get a grade? If you did, and you could find it and send it to me, I'll give you a gift. I'll pay $100 for a copy of what I wrote as a kid in reading that. But what is it about I and Thou? Okay, I and Thou sounds like highbrow, but actually it isn't. What does it mean? Buber's main idea was that we can address our existence in two ways, that of the I towards an it, that is towards an object that is separate from us, okay? Or I towards a Thou, in which we move into existence into a relationship that's limitless. So what is the major theme of his book? Is that human life finds its most meaning in relationships, I and thou. And all of our relationships, Buber said, brings us ultimately into relationship with God, who is the eternal thou, I and thou. Meaning, in order to know God, you have to go through people. In order to know God, you have to have a relationship with people. I mean, it's been put other ways by other people, such as Life is with People. That was a popular book that a man wrote, 40 years ago that I loved. Life is with People, Pop Psychology. You can sit alone in your house complaining and kvetching and saying life is no good. Or you can go out and you can talk to a person on the street. It could be anybody, a doorman. Do I have to tell you who? A newspaper seller, a blind person. A man in a tuxedo. Have a conversation with anybody in an elevator, in a building. I have conversations in a building that I'm in that last 30 seconds sometimes, and I contact the person. I don't do it with everyone. Sometimes I will and sometimes I won't. Depends upon the situation and the mood I'm in. But I find every time I have a relationship with a stranger like that, I'm brought into a contact that takes me out of me. I feel a harmony in myself. I feel an I and thou. And maybe it ties me into the eternal. Okay, whatever. Ish undu, I and thou. But you have to have an I to have a thou. You have to have an I, meaning a you, in order to be able to relate to thou, to some other person or to God. Now you finally can understand, boys and girls, why Hollywood is 99% atheist. There's no I, so there can be no relationship with thou. It's I. I. I'd rather fall down with my skirt falling over my face than admit I'm nothing. I. I'm in the newspaper. I. I'm in a magazine. I. Look how disgustingly wonderful I look. I. I'm going to see Castro. I. I'm going to see Chavez. I. Can't finish a sentence without sounding like a stone racketeer. Why? Because there's no I. There can be no thou. Without a relationship toward people, there can be no relationship with God. Now you understand finally, boys and girls, why 99.9% of the people in Hollywood don't believe in God and don't relate to people. Because there's no I, so there can be no thou.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Let's have some rock and roll. Let's get the callers up at 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com website. I can't hear it. What's going with the music? What am I going deaf? I feel like I went underwater for a minute. All right. Here's the headlines on MichaelSavage.com. I have a bigger audience than the San Francisco Chronicle. Muslim prayers approved for classroom in New Jersey. That's right. The very same atheistic, America-hating, Christian-hating vermin who said that you can't even bring a prayer book to school, let alone pray in school, have approved Muslim prayers in a classroom floor during lunch at the Albert Payson Terhune Elementary School to perform the Muslim prayer ritual. So if you don't think liberalism is not only a mental disorder but a dangerous mental disorder, you're insane. Hollywood team in Iran on cultural exchange, very much like the 1930s all over again, isn't it? American leftists traveling to visit Joseph Stalin and coming back and saying, God, we saw Potemkin Village and it was beautiful. What a beautiful village it was over there. The Soviets don't have a prison labor camp in the 1930s. They have a wonderful war. And then how about you wonderful Hollywood morons, your ancestors who went to Germany during the 1930s to visit concentration camps and came back and said the Jews were happy. They were all tailors. They were finally happy again. They weren't nastily becoming scientists or doctors or bankers. They were happy being little tailors in the German concentration camp. Well, that's what Annette Bening appears to be doing now in Iran. So when you say, isn't she pretty, isn't she nice? No, she's not pretty and she's not nice. She's exactly what she appears to be. And she's not very nice. It's not very nice to look at this. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is not fair game. Here's one that's a little off the topic, okay, which is actually my monologue. I have to go to the top of the page. Don't nationalize the newspapers, rationalize the newspapers. And that's a very important story about the San Francisco Chronicle, because it's getting ready to rearrange the deck chairs over there as the ship goes down. The Comical announced that they would be making deep cuts to their staff, and if they could not cut costs quickly enough, they'd either sell or close the newspaper. Fact of the matter is, I mean, I've been here since 1974, and I've enjoyed the paper, but I've seen it go downhill into this neo-Marxist propaganda sheet on a, you know, like a decline, like a ship going down. So I'm going to make an offer again on this show that I made the other day, which is that if the Chronicle is unable to make the necessary cutbacks and return to profitability, I, Michael Savage, make a bona fide offer of $100 to buy the San Francisco Chronicle, but not the debt. Of course, you see, if I became the owner of the newspaper, I could actually produce a newspaper that would make money. You have to understand why newspapers are going out of business. They keep saying it's the ad revenue. They keep saying the ads are going to the internet. Now, some of that is true. Some of the ad revenue is dried up. Some of the internet advertising has taken ads from the paper. But that's not the reason the papers are going broke. By catering exclusively to the homosexual audience and to illegal aliens and to anti-American, anti-police, anti-family, anti-religious elements, they've alienated the core audience of working mainstream Americans. Now, why would you buy a newspaper that insults your values, that calls you names, that implies you're evil or racist or homophobic, when you can turn on talk radio and have your value system reinforced? How many illegal aliens will buy a newspaper in English? None. Very few. Let's put it to you that way. How many gays can there be in a city that will buy the San Francisco newspaper? How many newspapers can they buy? They still don't understand why they're going out of business. And so that's why I say don't nationalize the newspapers, rationalize the newspapers. The day they become rational, they might be profitable. But I'm not holding my breath. This is the Savage Nation. If you care to comment on this, don't call the show. There's another article that we found for your reading entertainment over this weekend on michaelsavage.com from ABC. Depression-era cuisine suddenly in style. Clara Canucciari, an old Sicilian lady, old. She's younger than most youngsters. She's in her 90s, has a show on the web, a cooking show. I think I'm going to do one, by the way. I'm going to do Savage Cooking. If this woman's 93 and she's the host of a cooking show and she has an audience, 93-year-old great-grandmother, host of her own online cooking show, and it's on frugal food recipes from Clara Canucciari, Depression Cooking with Clara. Sounds like fun to me. That's why they lived long, because they ate very simple foods. You don't understand that. The simpler the food, the simpler the diet, the longer you live. The more effete and high-end the diet, the more sick you'll get. I wrote about this in 1980. I myself understand these recipes. One of her recipes, for example, is pasta and peas. I mean, a real genius. I love this woman. She looks like my mother, God rest her soul. Grandma's tricks to save in the kitchen. She said, my father had to have his pasta every day, and my mother insisted we always have a little meat, too. My family says I eat too much pasta. I could eat it three times a day. They don't let me. It's bad for you. You got wheat. There are morons out running around. Wheat allergy. Every schmuck in America has a wheat allergy. Gluten. They found a miracle now. They found out. They discovered. Some quack doctor told them, the reason you're a fat slob and you wheeze and you can't have sex is because of gluten. And then they stopped eating everything with gluten. Moron. You see, they walk down. It's gluten-free. They walk down an aisle. No pasta. No potato. No this. No that. 3 weeks later, they think they're Superman because they gave up all of these foods. They're walking with a magnifying glass now. They're better than everybody. It's a racket to get over on you, so they come to your house. Oh, no, no, I can't eat that. No, no, I'm sorry. I can't. I have a gluten allergy. I'm sorry. Do you have any broccoli, perhaps? I know this type. I knew them for 30 years. They come to a party just to, you know, basically urinate on your parade to show you how cool they were. They always had some racket going with their diet. Yeah, don't go out if you're so sickly. You know, and stay home and eat a Fig Newton and then drink the dew in the morning. Go lick the grass in your backyard, idiot. Gluten allergy. How come all the old Sicilians lived to 95 eating spaghetti every night? Explain that to me. They didn't know about gluten. They'd knock you around the house a little bit. The gluten would come out of your ears. That's why I didn't have gluten allergies. Gluten allergies. For eons, people didn't have enough to eat. And finally, mankind became smart enough to grow enough wheat with modern pesticides and modern agricultural techniques. So there's a bounty of wheat on the world stage now. Now already the idiots are telling you that's no good for you. Oil's no good for you. Wheat's no good for you. What's good for you? What do they eat there in Hollywood? Idiot. She's 93. I guarantee you she ate a lot of pasta. So pasta and peas. That's what I do. I always make more spaghetti than I need for that night. I always make like an extra so it's in the bowl because I like to cheat and have it again the next day. And I throw green peas in it. If I don't want to eat very much that night, you just put a drop of olive oil in a pan. I told you this before. You know my secret, my pasta and an egg? I told you the next day. Guys have been writing me for 2 years about it. I don't want to give you a recipe. It's easy enough. You don't have to be a genius. But if you heat the oil up in the non-skid pan and you throw in the noodles, the best of shells, by the way, for some reason they get crispier. And you got to make it on very high heat and almost burn the noodle for a while. But keep moving around like in a Chinese wok. Move, 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 move. And then you're going to get them very crispy. I love the crispy noodles. And then you throw an egg on them at the end. One egg mixed in with the noodles. And if you want some green peas, if you really want to live dangerously. And I swear it's unbelievably tasty. Why do you need a fancy meal? Why? I mean, okay, have one if you want it. Everyone likes holiday food every once in a while. But here's Clara Cannocchiari cooks the meals her mother made during the Great Depression. And she has a little video show now, an online cooking show. Isn't that sweet? So I'm going to ask you, have you gone to some frugal recipes lately, whatever your ethnic group is? You know what I'm saying? What are they? What are you eating? Here's a woman born in Chicago in 1915 to Sicilian immigrant parents. And now she's still living. She's living in upstate New York. And she's popular as an internet chef of a cuisine born of frugality and resourcefulness. It's wonderful. America has a new grandmother to look up to instead of some old, you know, loser in New York there who gave her money to Bernie Madoff. I'll be right back. Savage. So I can continue to talk about food, or I can tell you that Larry Kudlow, who's a very well-known, you know, writer on business, the Kudlow Report, says that Obama has declared war on investors, entrepreneurs, businesses, and more. He says he is declaring war on investors, entrepreneurs, small businesses, large corporations, and private equity and venture capital funds. That is the meaning, he says, of his anti-growth tax hike proposals, which make absolutely no sense at all, either for this recession or from the standpoint of expanding our economy's long-run potential to grow. I agree 100%. In fact, I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, what do I really want to say about Obama today? I mean, studying what this man is doing and what I hear people are saying about him. And I realized that to me now, his policies are very similar to that of a 1960s Black Panther such as H. Rapp Brown or Huey Newton. It's a different kind of low-key Black Panther taking over America. But you want to have a discussion on this. His policies are of the radical left. His policies are no different than the radical left. His policies are that of the radical left. And the man knows absolutely nothing about the economy. He is a college professor, a left-winger at that, who has never met a payroll. The man does not even understand what he is talking about, but he is excellent at talking. The tax hikes will generate lower growth and fewer revenues. You understand this? Why would an entrepreneur invest if he's only going to be taxed for his profits? Why? The answer is they won't. He's going to deter investment. He's going to deter recovery. It is a movement towards the radical left rhetoric of the 1960s. And I don't believe anyone in this Obama administration, I would say some of them actually know what he's doing, but they're not going to step out of line or they're going to lose their job. What are we going to do when it all comes down, man? Bring it all down, man. Remember the phrase of the 60s? If Obama keeps this up, he's going to bring it all down, girl. But I'd rather talk about gluten to show you the stupidity of people today. Everyone has an allergy, wherever you go. I can't imagine what it's like to be in a restaurant anymore. Oh, by the way, no sugar, no salt, no pepper, no this. And by the way, peanuts, is anything in the back with a peanut? Does it have gluten? I don't want gluten. Does it have sulfites? I don't want salt. What can you eat then? New York, Al, W-O-R, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I am laughing my tail off because I'm a supervisor in Westchester in the supermarket chain, and I had it up to here with this gluten-free, sugar-free, no trans fat. It's out of control. I call them hippie food. That's what I call it, hippie food.
Yeah, but how come an old Sicilian, 93, grew up on pasta, and her husband in his 90s on pasta? What, they didn't know about gluten allergies?
Thank you, Dr. Savage. There is
how did they live so long without such rarefied diets like a lab rat?
Because there are so many chemicals in the food we eat in America. If you just take a look at the boxes, I deal with this every day. There's so much garbage on the shelves that people buy that even all these non-sugar items and gluten-free, and it's just it'd be politically correct. They want to buy everything gluten-free. And you know what's that?
But everything, they're so rare. They're too, you know, it's like bottled water. Let me explain something. Years and years ago, we made a decision in my household to drink tap water. Why? Because we said, what if the day comes that we can't afford or can't find bottled water? What, I can't drink a glass of tap water? Let my body get used to taking the cadmium out on its own. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you. You're 100% right. You're from...
I mean, what's the matter? You know, the human organism is very powerful. It's a very strong organism. We're very strong. And the more you treat it like something delicate and weak, the weaker it becomes. And the more you treat it with a little bit of disregard, the stronger it becomes.
Tell me about
That's absolutely a fact of reality. I'm going to tell you the truth. This obsession with all of this sissified dieting everyone's involved in. It's all sissification. Everything, the gluten-free, peanut-free, fish-free, this-free, that-free. What's left in the food? How about a bowl of spaghetti? Can't eat it. Got gluten in it. How about a piece of bread? Can't eat it. It's got gluten in it. Can you eat a bean? Not unless it's organically grown. And it's got to be grown at 3,492 feet in the Himalayas and brought in by a swami in order for me to touch it. And by the way, is it ecologically friendly? Did it not damage a newt or a fly while it was raised? While it was brought down the hills of the Himalayas by the Sherpas, did they step on a clover leaf and damage the clover leaf on the way down to the marketplace? Or is it a sensitive, ecologically friendly delivery system that they use? I mean, come on, you idiots, you. This is a form of Jainism. I told you what Jainism is. I know you think it's something to do with gay. It isn't. I don't mean that kind of Jain. I don't mean J-A-N-E. I said Jainism, J-A-I-N. The Jains of India walk around with a little gauze mask on, and they wave a fan in front of their faces as they walk down the streets of India, because they do not want to even ingest a sentient creature that might be flying by. You want to see how far you go with this whacked out theory? Then move to India, become a Jain. But don't walk down a supermarket shelf like a Jain, making sure that everything is weeded out but what you want to eat. Unbelievable. So when you see you're going to eat like depression era diets again, meatloaf, I think comfort food is coming back for sure. Thank God. Thank God of it. I myself don't like beans. I can't eat them. I just can't eat them. I can't digest beans. I never could. That goes for tofu as well. I hate it. I get gas and distended. The other night, I started to take food out the other night from a local Italian restaurant that I shun. Because it's like truck driver Italian food. It's like thugs with bad shoes in there. I'm nothing against truck drivers. They're like dirty pants and dirty shoes. But the food has always been consistently old-style diner Italian. Took out like... You know, pot roast and potatoes and a piece of fish. I got a piece of fish. I got two pieces of fish and steamed vegetables. It was unbelievable. How could you not love it? The dogs went crazy at the smell in the kitchen. The minute that meatloaf, that pot roast came in the kitchen, they went crazy. They hadn't smelled real food in years. All this rarefied Chinese, Japanese, Thai. They can keep it all. It's all trick food anyway. They trick it all up. They get an old cat and chop it up in half the joints, or an old piece of cow or whatever. Ugh. And they mix it up with a sauce. It's all trick food. That's all. You're going to see meat and potatoes are going to make a comeback. The Manhattan, the martini, it's all making a comeback. A beer, $3 glass of wine, homemade wine. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Savage.
Everything is plastic. Everything's upside down. I told you, so I found the tools my father left me 30 years ago. They're in the bottom of the tool case, and I picked them up, and I showed them to a clocksmith who came to my house. The man is 80. You know, his tools are beautiful German machining on the screwdriver, I noticed. So I said, take a look at this wrench my father gave me. You can't believe, like, the screw that drives the part of the wrench that closes down. The machining on it is something to behold, you know, made in a machine shop by hand. Beautiful. So, you know, I'm talking about old tools and this and that. We got from one thing to the other. And everything's upside down. Everything's plastic. Look at the theology schools today. I noticed it going on 30 years ago. University of California at Berkeley, when I was going for my PhD, used to have a wonderful school of theology. I would look around and I would see one. I don't know how to put it to you. Shall I say the word liberal? It won't connote what I'm trying to get across to you. It seems to me atheists have taken over theology schools. I've never seen it. How did that happen? How did they invade the schools of theology? You know, the same way they invaded schools of psychology, to warp the family through psychology, to warp religion through theology. So when I say to you, if I'm giving you a short version of Ish and Do, I and Thou, by Martin Buber, and what it means, I could just hear the liberals saying, well, I don't hear any Vivaldi music. That's not NPR. How can he know anything about Ish and Do? I mean, has he been approved? Have we read of him somewhere? Has he been on Saturday Night Live? Has he been approved? No, I haven't been approved by any of your stupid newspapers or publications. But you're listening to a man who was widely read, widely educated, which you liberals, of course, have espoused for decades. Didn't you espouse liberal educations where a man should read widely and be exposed widely? Well, here it is. That's me. But my politics are the opposite of liberalism because I've come to understand how deadly it is. I don't want to live in Cuba. I don't want to wind up in Venezuela with the state controlling everything. I don't want Bonnie Franco dictating the newspapers. You understand what I'm saying to you? What kind of world do you want to live in? Don't you people even understand where you're leading, where you're going? You think they're going to be nice to you because they're unnice to conservatives? You're next, my friend. Tommy in Austin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey. I just want to slip this into you. You're talking about theology. I was gonna, before I go into when I was practicing meism. Just wanted to mention Wiccan. You'll be glad you looked at it. Read about Father Alberto Rivera.
Whoa! I don't recommend any websites on my show because I don't know what's on them. So, what is your main point?
My main point is, I used to worship myself. You know, I was grew up a good-looking kid, and I knew it. You know, you ever see that movie Saturday Night Fever?
Yes.
That was kind of like the story of my life.
Well, most young people are like that. You know, that's what they're into. They're into narcissism and me. That's okay when you're a child, but if you're still that way as a man, you know, what do? You put on seminars on motivational seminars, I guess.
Well, I worship me, and I love money. When I first felt I could get a wad of money easy, I fell in love with fast cash, and I became a criminal, too, on top of it. Until I became a Christian in 1977, everything changed. A Puerto Rican guy led me to Christ, told me I was going to hell. I needed a Savior, and I laughed at him. I thought he was nuts. And I opened a King James Bible and saw that Christ died on the cross for my sins, thought he shed his blood, and I trusted that, and everything changed. I turned into a fanatic overnight.
So, in other words, you went from me to I, and from I you went to thou.
Right, exactly. But
only I can boil things down directly and simply and correctly. Is that right?
Well, Michael, let me tell you, yeah, exactly. I wanted to tell you, everything's breaking down, but it's called the law of entropy. Everything degenerates and deteriorates. It's natural. It's we get old.
Entropy, not entropy. Entropy is something the NBA gives out. Thank you for the call. Entropy, my friends, entropy. So let's have some rock and roll, from machine tools to political tools, Obama's sagging popularity. Any rock and roll would be appreciated. What is this? Baba Ding Dong. All right. It is the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Hold it. I can't hear the music. Let me hear the music for 1 minute. All right, so now all of the doctrinaire Republicans are criticizing Obama. You know, and I find it a little difficult to take for one reason. Why didn't they criticize Bush for many of the same policies? For example, Bolton. I invited Bolton on this show when he was riding high, when he was UN ambassador. He wouldn't come on the show. Now, because he has no job, he's criticizing radical Obama as bad news for the U.S. Too bad, Bolton. You're out of business. You know what I'm saying? You should have come on the show while you had a little power, because you're never getting there. You're not coming through this door. 1-800-4... No, that's the way the world works. I remember. I have a memory that never fails, never. You diss me when you're in power. Remember what Jimmy Durante said? You better be nice to everyone on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way down. I'll never forget that when I was a kid. Jimmy Durante, a comedian. He said that. I learned from odd places. You better be nice to everyone on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way down. And that goes for all the Republicans. And since they weren't very nice to me on the way up, they're going to meet me on the way down, but they're not coming through this door. They can go to the wall banger if they want. That's all. Go to the wall banger. That's where you're welcome. So what do you want to talk about in the waning moments of this hour? You know, I love Fridays, the weekend. No one knows what they're going to do on the weekend, but I love Fridays. You think you're going to have a good time again like you're 17? You're not going to have a good time. You're going to have a horrible time. Believe me, it's going to be another horrible 70 some odd hours till you're back to work, which is the only thing you like. Most Americans love to work. I love to work. I wait for the weekend, and I can't wait till Monday. Then Monday, I can't wait till Friday. And then Friday, I can't wait till Monday. It's the cycle I taught myself to work. It's my salvation. But if you think it's sad, you're wrong. I happen to love the sculptures, the sculptings of Rodin, okay? I love them. I've collected reproductions since I'm 17 years old. So if you read a little bit about Rodin, he said, work is the only salvation. Work, work, work is the only salvation. Well, you look at some of the great painters, even the great impressionists of that time. Some of these men had killer arthritis. They couldn't move their fingers. They had a paintbrush attached to their wrist so they can keep painting. They didn't retire. What do you want to retire for? To do what? Play golf? Meet fellow check pants Republicans? Why would you want to do that? I think work has its own, you know, beauty to it if you enjoy what you're doing to a certain extent. And there's a whole trend going on in America right now of elders who have lost their 401ks and are returning to the workplace. You know, I don't take any pleasure in hearing that, but I think it's going to be better for America to have a lot of older people back into the workforce because they're smarter, they're more reliable, they're better workers. And there's no reason a man or a woman couldn't work into their 80s if they're healthy. There's none at all. Your mind doesn't necessarily get weaker. Sometimes it gets stronger and more focused. So that's that. It's neither here nor there, but it's a Friday. It's the Savage Nation. And I thought I'd share with you. So if you want to call on any of these topics, you wanted me to read from a psychological nudity. No, I'm not in the mood to read from it today. But I do want to note to you that the inventory is down to around 1,000 now left of this printing. And I don't know whether I'm going to reprint it. I probably will. But this is it. One Arm Frank, When Pasta Was Spaghetti. I know many of you don't have much money, but it's a book you're going to want to have. It's like a tradition. It's about America. It's about me. Savage Radio Stories and my darling little Teddy. How can a dog, I was thinking about that last night in bed, jumps up in bed. He's only 10 pounds. How can a little 10-pound creature have a personality? I don't understand that. Sometimes I'm mystified by life. I got to tell you the truth. I think about it. Why is one animal given life and protected and cared for and treated, and another animal is put in a cage and killed? I don't understand that part of it. Why is one animal selected to have a wonderful life and another animal selected to suffer? Why is one human born crippled and bent up and broken and doesn't enjoy a second of existence? And some of the worst people on earth live until their 90s in their penthouse, not repenting for who they robbed, like Madoff. Why is Madoff still in his penthouse? Why is there no one outside the judge's chambers? Why are there not 10,000 investors screaming for the judge to be investigated? I will tell you why. Because they're all nice, passive liberals. They only have a big mouth for George Bush and Republicans. They have a big yap on them hating Bush and hating Republicans. But when it came to going and getting the money that was stolen from them, suddenly they don't have a word to say. Why? Well, that's the personality of the liberal. They only hate conservatives. They only hate people like George Bush. But when it comes to a man like Madoff, who actually robbed them, you don't hear any bitterness or anger. You don't hear a word. Or the judge who's obviously bought off like a cheap pimp. Why is the judge not being investigated by the FBI? Who lets a crook live in his penthouse with this kind of money stolen? People are asking across America. And to make matters worse, wait, it gets worse. The latest guy who's allegedly a crook, a scam artist, the one from Texas, his lawyer is the same lawyer as Madoff has, and he's asking for home detention. You hear this? Can you believe the country you're living in where you can buy judges like this? Now, look, not all judges are corrupt. We understand that. Unfortunately, in New York, it's very difficult to find anything except, well, watch The Godfather. You'll understand what I'm talking about. You know, who do we know at the papers? All right, run this headline. Who do we know in the courts? So you're selling me protection and you're selling me the political connections and the courts, huh? Why, things have changed. What's changed here? And with a case as egregiously disgusting as Madoff, why is this man not pulled out of his apartment and put into prison? Him and his wife. Him and the old lady. Why? Why have they not been put into a prison? The answer is the judge. So that's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. Now, if you want to talk about this, what are you going to say to me? You agree with me? You disagree with me? What are you going to say? A man is innocent until he's proven guilty? All right, fine. Yeah, Blagojevich was also innocent, according to Chico Rivera, whatever his name is, on Fox News. What's his name? Jerry Rivers? I forget his name. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Jerry Rivers, Geraldo Rivera, came out screaming that Blagojevich was being railroaded. He's still on television? Gave away troop movements a few years ago. Still on Murdoch's... I don't know how you people don't understand what's going on in this country. What does conservative mean to you? A liberal like the leprechaun who takes the side of gay marriage, he says there's global warming when he should know better since he went to Harvard. That to you passes for conservative? Now, here's the interesting part of all of this. His radio show failed, which is why he's off the radio. Don't believe anything else. His ratings were in the toilet. You can't go on the radio and lie. It's impossible to do it day in and day out. Because there's no women, there's no legs, there's no lipstick, there's no lights, there's no cameras, there's no action, there's no petite mal flashing of scenery. You're listening to me, and you're obviously hearing only a voice. That's all you're hearing. In the midst of all the clutter, you hear my voice. And for some reason, you keep listening. After all these years, after 15 years on the radio, my audience has not gotten smaller but bigger. I was told the other day, for example, that in one market, in San Francisco only, 1 million people a month listen to me on the web. In one market, people listen to me on the internet in one market. Why? Because they hear something that they don't hear anywhere else. Why? Because I'm not BSing you. You hear something that sounds authentic, and so you listen for more of it. You thirst for it, don't you? What I say to you about these things that you never hear on the news... Well, it almost sounds pornographic. I know it sounds odd, but in an age where everything is controlled and contrived, and everything is sanitized and pasteurized and spray-painted over and stuccoed over, somehow the real McCoy comes through, and it almost sounds like you're listening to something that's almost illegal to listen to. Now, why is it that Durbin Turbin from Illinois wants to close down my show? Why does Dianne Feinstein, as rich as she is, want to control me and get me off the radio? What do they have to hide? What is it, the truth itself that they want to hide? Or the fact that they don't control what I have to say that bothers them? Because, as Lord Acton taught us all, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. These kings and queens think that they shall control what we shall hear. I have another guest coming for them. And the reason I say that is it has some dimension to it. Debbie Stabenow came out a few weeks ago wanting the Fairness Doctrine. Well, talk radio found out that her husband programmed Air America, that her husband is actually involved in liberal programming and radio, and she shut her mouth pretty quick and went to the other side. She realized it would look pretty bad during a congressional hearing if it came out that her husband was actually interested in killing the competition under the guise of so-called fairness. And I can assure you of one thing, ladies and gentlemen. I am being represented by the Thomas More Law Center, but I'm represented by something larger than that, and that's the truth itself. And the truth ultimately shall set us free. And I am giving Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin a very fair warning. Get off our backs. You're doing real well. You're doing better than you ever dreamed you would do. Get off our backs, because the millions of Americans who are listening have access to computers, and they're going to start digging in to your affairs, your wife's affairs, your husband's affairs, your children's affairs. Get off our backs. Leave well enough alone. That's my suggestion. I'll be right back.
I need Don Corleone, those politicians that you carry in your pocket, like so many nickels and dimes.
What is the interest for my family?
30%. In the first year, your end should be $3-4 million, and then it would go up.
And what is the interest for the D'Italia family?
I'll take care of the D'Italias. Out of my share.
So I receive 30% for finance, political influence, and legal protection. That's what you're telling me.
That's right.
Yeah, things have changed. That's why Madoff is still in his penthouse. He's under penthouse arrest. I can't hear the music, though. There's like something wrong with it. I like it loud. All right. Thank you very much. So I read in New York, with no aspersions meant, Manhattan DA Robert Morgenthau is stepping down after 35 years on the job. He will turn 90 in July. He's been at the job since President Ford was in office. You hear that? How could guys keep jobs that long? Till they're 90? How is that possible? I mean, I could just imagine that he says, what's that in your pocket there? Is it one of them cellular devices? We hear you can walk around with them things. Who's the fellow there? Bernie? Bernie couldn't have done it. I know him for years. No, he's a good guy. Guy was born in 1919 to a wealthy, prominent New York family. This is leading to some. His grandfather, Henry Morgenthau Sr., was U.S. ambassador to Turkey during World War I. Wow. And his father, Henry Morgenthau Jr., was Treasury Secretary under FDR. Now, this is interesting. Because Henry Morgenthau Jr., his father, liberal Democrat, Treasury Secretary on FDR, after 6 years of spending under FDR, he said, I don't see anything happening. We're getting nothing for the money. You look this up. Obama apparently has not read history. He doesn't even understand that Morgenthau, the Treasury Secretary on the FDR, said after 6 years of this break the bank, deficit spending, that we've spent, and we haven't made a dent. I've changed the words, but the meaning is the same. You see, I mean, he was a good friend, this guy, Morgenthau, for John F. Kennedy. So he's a lifer. And, you know, but he was a good DA. He included the conviction of a crack dealer who murdered the son of AOL Time Warner head, Gerald Levin. He convicted those seven vermin who stabbed to death a Utah tourist in a subway mugging in 1990. That was a heartbreaker. He put away Dennis Kozlowski, the former Tyco CEO. He prosecuted Bernie Goetz in 1984. You know, that was a mistake, in my opinion. The man was defending himself. He prosecuted the Central Park jogger case. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not so sure that if you read about his father as Treasury Secretary, you're going to find what I just said to you. Morgenthau Sr., who was the Treasury Secretary under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who we're hearing about all the time now, because the libs want you to think that Obama's a combo of JFK, Lincoln, and FDR, which of course we know he isn't. The Treasury Secretary said after 6 years of deficit spending, going into the hole, in other words, for social programs, it did not make a dent on the Depression. Nothing. Obama didn't read that at Harvard, apparently. He didn't make it into his textbook. By that time already, it was forgotten that the only thing that got us out of the Depression was World War II. And that's why I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, if you think Iraq was bad, wait until you see a few years from now what he has to do to bail us out. It's going to be a wartime economy. So, you know, get your hat and get your coat, because here we go. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Michael Savage, and here's what I've been talking about today, from machine tools to political tools and Obama's sagging personality or popularity. Let's go to the machine tools to political tools. You know, the tools that our fathers gave to us when we were kids, they were built to last. They were solid American construction. They had wooden handles, not plastic ones. They looked as though they might have been used by Visigoths as weapons while raiding a coastal village in the 4th century. Today, in place of the powerful, well-constructed hand tools that once built the furniture and houses of America, we have cheap Chinese tools that is designed to break down and be thrown away after a year or two. Well, this leads us to the political tools of today, mainly Obama, who seems to be the ultimate tool of the left. Leaders of the past spoke words that are remembered by history. Nothing Obama says is remembered beyond the 24-hour news cycle. Leaders of the past look to America's long-term interests. Obama looks only at the short-term interests of his neo-Marxist supporters. He is ready-made to get them power and will be replaced, I believe, by them as soon as he served his usefulness. He is the ultimate disposable president to the worldwide leftist conspiracy. And that leads us to Obama's sagging popularity. You think he's super popular. How is the disposable president doing in the polls? Well, not so well, actually. We're talking about the Gallup poll. And it turns out that after only a single month in office, his approval rating is already fallen below 60%, which is lower than George Bush's after 1 month. And I'm asking you, do you think Obama's destined to be a one-term president? I'll ask the liberals today, what has he most disappointed you with? The mutation of the fairness doctrine. One of the last honest men in the U.S. Senate, South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint, stood up and fired back against all the neo-Marxist censors who would like to destroy freedom of speech by imposing the so-called unfairness doctrine on America. He introduced the Broadcaster Freedom Act, which would prevent the FCC from reimposing the unfairness doctrine, and he forced a vote on it as a writer, and it passed 87-11. Listen to his words as he spoke on the Senate floor.
We need to act here to make sure that this oppression, this tyranny, is not reimposed on the American people. Because it's not just important to protect what radio talk show hosts can say. What we're really trying to protect is what millions of Americans are free to listen to. Different opinions, facts. Basically changing the whole mission of the federal government from one that stands up for the national interest and constitutional government to one that is essentially trying to run local governments and state governments and to rearrange our Constitution.
Good job, Senator. Somebody in power is standing up at last. See, but the victory was marred by the fact that Senator Turbin Durbin attached an amendment to the bill that subverts its purpose. Here is a section from Senator Turbin Durbin's amendment. Certain affirmative actions are required. The FCC shall take actions to encourage and promote diversity in communication media ownership and to ensure that broadcast station licenses are used in the public interest. Does that mean that Al Sharpton will be running radio stations along with Jesse Jackson? Or how about Louis Farrakhan? That's diversity for you. Listen to the words. Certain affirmative actions required. Durbin, you see, Turbin Durbin, who called our troops Nazis, is trying to return us not only to the unfairness doctrine, but to the failed doctrine of affirmative action, which has been rejected again and over again by the American people. He says he wants to promote diversity in media ownership. Well, that ultimately means taking radio stations from men and women who have worked for years to build them and hold on to them and love them, and now hand them over to morons who don't know the first thing about business just because of their race? This is racism pure and simple. Attorney General Holder, are you listening? And what exactly does Turban Durban mean by the public interest? The phrase public interest has an ominous ring to it, kind of like public broadcasting or People's Army. Durbin's idea of the public interest is broadcasting the neo-Marxist agenda 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So don't pretend that the fairness doctrine has been defeated. In fact, it's mutated into something far more virulent, like AIDS itself. But there are other topics out there. 1-800-449-8255. The San Francisco Chronicle, my home newspaper, well, it used to be, is getting ready to rearrange the deck chairs as their ship goes down. Yesterday, the SF Comical announced that they would be making deep cuts to their staff, and if they could not cut costs quickly enough, that is if the stupid union doesn't let go of some of these deadbeat leftist phonies with long hair coming out of their nose and ears, they'd either sell or close the newspaper. Let's listen to the inheritors of the once proud Hearst organization and what they had to say.
Newspapers used to report other people's problems. Now they are in a fight for their life.
It's in a free fall, and nobody knows where the bottom is. It's kind of like the water in the toilet. It's swirling around.
The bad news arrives every day across America. Readers, especially younger readers, are shifting to the Internet. A dramatic decline in advertising and a brutal economy has forced newspapers to cut costs by firing cartoonists, columnists, and more, and sharing resources with former competitors.
Well, it's a sad state of affairs. But these leftist media mavens have nobody to blame but themselves. By catering exclusively to the gay audience and to illegal aliens, they have fundamentally alienated their core audience of working mainstream readers. It's just not the economy, whatever they say. When people have a choice between paying for a newspaper that insults them by calling them evil, racist, homophobic conservatives, or to turn on the radio and hearing the truth from Michael Savage for free, they'll choose me. The newspapers in the past were patriotic in nature. They were jingoistic, but they rallied behind the country during war. They represented real American values and not perversion. It is because they now represent anti-American, anti-family values that papers across the country are failing. It's not just that ad revenue is falling. It's that their morals have fallen. San Francisco and other cities deserve real news, not neoliberal Marxist propaganda. And so I will reiterate the offer I made in this program before. If the SF Cron is unable to make the necessary cutbacks and return to profitability, I, Michael Savage, will pay $100 to buy the newspaper, excluding the debt. That may seem like a low price to some, but it reflects how low the Chronicle has fallen in the esteem of regular, working Americans. Some have suggested that the newspaper is in such a tight fix that we need to give them a bailout and nationalize them. Maybe have Barney Frank dictate editorial control or Senator Durbin. I say don't make them national. Make them rational. Don't nationalize the newspapers. Rationalize the newspapers. I, Michael Savage, will be right back.
Savage.
I don't know how many of you actually watched The Anointed Ones, B.O.'s address to Congress. Well, it was on every channel. Joining us now to talk about what he heard is Senator James Inhofe. I personally didn't listen to it.
Well, hi, Michael. I have to say this, that our new president is one real speaker. That guy can – I looked around and I saw people, some of them actually believing this stuff. It was pretty incredible to look at the expressions on the faces of the Democrats who have been waiting for someone like this to come along for a long period of time. Let me make a comment that I think is significant, a couple of things that perhaps others aren't talking about. First of all, when he talks about one half of the deficit at the end of his first term, let's keep in mind, if you would take, and these are figures that I've used for quite some time, if you take George W.'s 8 years and his deficits, and you add them together and divide by eight, it comes out to $245 billion. Now, the casual listener would think that he's going to take that $245 billion and cut that in half at the end of his first administration. However, what he's really doing, and CBO will back me up on this, the real bottom figure would be $1.2 trillion. Some are estimating that his deficit this time, 09, could be as high as 1.8. So let's use 1.5 trillion. What he's talking about is going up from 245 billion to 1.5 trillion, then cutting his 1.5 trillion in half, which is tripling the current deficit. Is that? I know that's hard to follow, but it's pretty clever. He got a standing ovation when he said he was going to cut the deficit in half by the end of his first administration, when in fact he'll be tripling the deficit. And anyone logically listening to everything that he's giving away would have to come to the conclusion that, you got to have government take over everything, education, health care, and the whole works.
Well, what did he have to say about global warming? What does he know about it? What do they know about global warming in Chicago? It's freezing there. They wear top coats, don't they? It's called the Windy City for a reason.
We had a hearing. I sat next to Barbara Boxer for 4 hours. It was on global warming, her first one. And the reason she started out with the science, the new science of global warming, is because you are aware that I've come out with all of these scientists who have changed their position. In fact, I hope that some of your listeners will access my website. It's Inhofe, spelled Inhofe, .senate.gov. If you do that, I've got 13 speeches over 1 hour apiece on the Senate floor on the hoax called global warming. And if you would just look at the last one, I think it was on about a month ago, where I listed the 650 scientists. Now that's up to 800, but 650 at that time, who were on the other side of this issue, who have come around to this side. And one of the things that we have to keep reminding the people, and I did this morning in this hearing, and it got people pretty upset. The American public, and you, Michael, know this better than anyone, are outraged by all the bailouts, the auto bailout, the housing bailout, the mortgage bailout, the bank bailout, this last stimulus package I call the economic bailout. But the climate bailout, the cost of what he is proposing, cap and trade, would not be it would be a permanent tax every year, somewhere between $300 and $330 billion a year. Now, as bad as the $789 billion stimulus package was, which doesn't stimulate, that's still a one-shot deal. This is a tax every year, and so we've got to get people programmed into the idea that if you do a cap and trade, and this is not Jim Inhofe talking. I'm not smart enough to figure this out. This is the Wharton School of Economics and the Wharton Econometric Survey. They say that's what it would cost if you're talking about some kind of cap and trade, like Kyoto or like Lieberman-Warner or Lieberman-McCain. So that's what we want to do, is make sure everybody knows that if we get into this thing in terms of a cap and trade system, that it's going to cost overall, by the time it's over, $6.7 trillion, which is a lot more than the $789 billion. One last thing on that. I know there are a few people out there who don't believe me and haven't believed me for the last 7 years. I've been trying to convince people of the truth on global warming. But even if you thought that man-made gases cause global warming, if you really believe that, then if we as the United States of America are the only country that does it, what's going to happen? Logically, you can't deny it. Those jobs are going to be where they can burn coal, where they can have electricity. They're going to go to countries like Mexico and China and India, and the net effect will be more CO2 into the air because they don't have any emission standards or requirements. So that's going to be one of the biggest issues that I'll be looking to people like you, Michael, and others to help me to join my truth squad on that.
What about Obama's plans on closing Gitmo? Where is he sending the terrorists?
The third thing that he mentioned in his speech was, I'm going to close Gitmo. Well, Gitmo, I've been there, I think, more than any other member has. I went the first time right after 9/11. It was January of 2002, and I went a couple weeks ago, and I've been there in between. One of the things that we have completely debunked is the notion that they've been torturing and not treating people in a humane way at Gitmo. Well, I can assure you they are. And there's no one who goes down there and walks through and evaluates the place that doesn't come to the same conclusion. The reason we have to keep Gitmo is the only alternative would be if he stops, if he does what the President Obama wants them to do there, stop the military tribunals, then those trials might go into our federal system. If that's the case, Michael, the rules of evidence are different, and it could very well be that they would be turned loose. And we're talking about really serious bad guys like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others. And they're even suggesting now that there are some 17 locations in continental United States that could take these guys on. We don't want that to happen. I look at Gitmo as something, a resource that we've had since 1903, and it's something where there is no substitution for it. We're escalating right now in Afghanistan. And as we do that, there are going to be more detainees coming. And while we do have places like Bagram and the Kandahar prisons in Afghanistan, they will only take detainees that are from Afghanistan. So if they're from Djibouti or Yemen or Saudi Arabia or someplace else, you got to find a place to keep these guys. The only place in the world now is Gitmo. We can't afford to lose that.
But why are we so surprised about what Obama's doing on Iraq?
Since I'm the second-ranking member on the Armed Services Committee, and I've had occasion, Michael, as you know, because we've talked about this before, being in Iraq and Afghanistan probably, well, in fact, more than any other member has. And you look at what the statements that he made. When he was making that statement about getting out of Iraq, the all-combat troops out of Iraq by I think they said September of 2010, if you do that, what you can't do is say you're going to take out X number. And I think that he was trying to come down with a number that had a little bit of fudging to it. He was saying right now we have 142,000 troops there, that he'd be taking out all but 50,000 troops. Well, the problem you have there is you don't know what's going to happen. Our troops have to be there during the December elections, and they have to be there to continue their training function. They're doing a great job. The Iraqis are coming through now. The Iraqi National Army is now taking charge of training themselves, but they have to do it under our supervision. Odierno is the guy that I think the president is going to have to ultimately listen to, but I really believe that the two statements that he made about closing Gitmo and about bringing the troops back from Iraq were responding to the liberal base who were upset with him during his inaugural address. They expected him to fall in line. I don't think either one of those things is going to happen.
Thanks, Senator. I don't think Obama has fooled everybody out there. No matter how much the mainstream media tries to push his agenda, his ratings are plummeting.
Hey, Michael, you're a great guy. I'm sure glad there are people like you out there, and thanks so much for what you're doing.
This is the Savage Nation. I'm going to talk about these and other topics even if the rest of the media refuses to. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Now, you may think that President Obama's poll numbers are real high. They're not. And I'm not talking about Savage poll. I'm talking about the Gallup poll. It's as middle of the road as it gets. He has a lower popularity at this time than Bush did at the same time in his administration. You won't hear that tonight on Will Blitzer. Obama announces an end to Iraq combat missions. He gives the exact date. I guess al-Qaeda needs to make plans to move in. And this will assure a smooth transition to an al-Qaeda-run Iraq so that all of the boys and men who died and have lost limbs will have died and lost limbs in vain. Thank you, President Obama, for giving the enemy an exit strategy, or shall I say an entrance strategy. And our great attorney general is saying that Obama will end raids on pot dispensaries in California, U.S. to yield marijuana jurisdiction to states. All power to the schmeeple. Right on. But enough of this Chairman Obama, the accidental president. With the scandals swirling around Madoff and Stanford, it seems that there are no ethics in business anymore, that shady business practices have become the standard now and not the exception. I don't believe that. Joining us today is David Armstrong, the president and CEO of Armstrong International, who says in his book, Hanging by a Thread, that you can be successful and profitable in business without selling out values. And I know that to be true. David Armstrong, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
What made you write this book?
Well, Hanging by a Thread, I wrote it about a year ago. It was actually before all this took place, but I saw these problems occurring 5-6 years ago with corruption in the marketplace, primarily with CEOs, and people were losing their confidence. To me, it's really nothing revolutionary in thinking. It's good common wisdom, but Armstrong International is my family's business. I'm the fourth generation, my son's the fifth, and we've been around, like I said, since 1900, and we actually manufacture products here in the United States and around the world.
You say you can keep your values and still run a successful business. I know it to be true.
Absolutely. And, of course, the question is, why is that happening? I mean, you don't have to lose your soul to be successful in business. There's a lot of good, hardworking CEOs, just like any other profession out there, doing the right thing. Unfortunately, we typically hear about all those scoundrels out there. Yeah, it's just basic common. To me, it's all about treating people with respect. Our whole family is believed. You trust the people that work with you. You engage them in the business. Turn them into entrepreneurs. We call them entrepreneurs within our big company. You give them visible signs to reinforce that attitude you want. The problem we have in America today is I don't think America knows what they believe in anymore. I think they've forgotten. We've taken God out of the schools and off the public buildings, and we're even taking off the currency. It's okay to lie, you know. It's okay to steal, because if you're a good performer, you can still be elected in, or nominated into a position, because performance is more important. What kind of a message do we send our children? Some of the sports figures, which are the highest paid people in America right now, I mean, what kind of an influence do they have? We need to get back to our basics, and we don't seem to talk enough about that. And if we don't remind the people what we stand for and give a standard, then you can't let them run their own lives. They don't know what to do. You got to give them a little guidance, but don't have the government take over.
It used to be your handshake in business meant something. I guess not anymore to guys like Madoff.
I love that. I actually, in one of my books I wrote, I had your handshake was more important than any piece of paper you could write on. If you deal with people with integrity, they will keep their word. You're the first one I've heard talk about that in a long time. That's an important thing. To keep stories alive, to keep our culture alive and who we are as a group of people, we have to retell stories, and I love telling stories. If I told you the Ten Commandments, most people can't tell you the Ten Commandments anymore, but that was a very popular story 2,000-plus years ago. If we don't keep reminding the next generation come up, this is what America was built on, this is what we stand for, they get lost. And it's our job as leaders and as parents to do that. We haven't done it enough. And a handshake is a great lesson that most people have never heard nowadays.
Well, with the bailout mentality, accountability seems to have been gone out the window.
Well, it is lost, and there's many reasons for that. But again, I'm really trying to drive a main point here. If you can't hold leaders accountable, you can't even hold the people accountable if we don't have a standard that we're going to live by, which I think we've lost in this country. Now, let's assume that we can get that standard back into the schools and get it back with our people. Accountability, you have to, if you're put into a certain position, you have to perform. But yet you can't say performance is more important than what you believe in. If you're not supporting the standards, I don't care how good a performer are, you should not be in that position of leadership. And that's where we make a mistake. The Constitution of the United States, Article 6, talked about our forefathers said, we're going to pay back our debts, even though we're creating a whole new government. They didn't say bailouts. They didn't say we're going to hand money out to people. So everybody's supposed to work. Everybody's supposed to be held accountable for what they did. Our forefathers got it. We've forgotten this.
What's the hope for our businesses in America?
I always, as a leader, great leaders give hope to their employees, to the people. President Obama, very good at delivering the speech, trying to give people hope. But you got to listen to the substance behind it. I don't want to say that it's too late, because I don't believe America can do anything, as we heard from the governor of Louisiana. He believed in the people. He gets it. Nowhere in the speech from Obama did I hear about standards and ethics. I mean, there was a reference to it, but no time was spent on it. And in the end, he says, God bless America. Well, excuse me, But you talked about education. Why don't you put God, you know, God back into the school systems? If that's, let's have a standard that lying, cheating, stealing, keeping your word are important. If we don't get to that, and that's what leaders' jobs are to do, to communicate to the mass of people, get them motivated, and then let them go do their thing. And that's what capitalism's about, and that's why this country was so great for so long.
Well, it all boils down to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Doesn't that say it all? That's been around for thousands of years. It's a great saying. And, you know, the problem is, though, people sometimes, well, I've been cheated, so I'm going to go cheat somebody else. No, there's an old saying that, you know, if somebody wrongs you as a person, you should forgive them as a Christian. But you can hold them accountable. If, for example, a wife is being beaten, she has to forgive that husband. But she can hold him accountable. She can divorce him. But they think, oh, no, I got to turn the other cheek. You know, that's not right. No, you hold people accountable. The Bible makes that very clear.
Why were the red flags in the Madoff and Stanford scandals ignored? Is the SEC corrupt?
Greed. We've all talked about greed. You know, I'm not a financial expert. I don't have all the details. But if people, if they will just, folks, just use some common sense. If somebody is promising you something too good to be true, we've all heard this, what's the end of it? It probably isn't true. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. There are financial scoundrels out there that are very sophisticated what they do. No matter how sharp you are, you're going to get caught. I feel sorry for the people that did. So don't put all your investments like you don't in your 401 and your pension, if you even have any more. Don't put it in one area because you've got to diversify. If you use some basic rules of common sense, you can avoid these things. Red flags, I would also say, is if you can't get to the person, if their people say we don't have access to information, it's locked up, you got to start asking yourself some questions.
Thanks, David. Hopefully more businesses will follow their core values and not only the bottom line. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Utter over. It was one of the lowest rated Oscars ever. Not just because of the movies that Hollywood put out this year, but because of the leftist political agenda they push on every show. Seems like every time somebody gets up to and accept an award, they spend 10 seconds saying thank you and 9 minutes preaching about how America is bad. James Herson with Newsmax joins us now for a report on what we can expect coming soon and the current shenanigans from Hollywood.
Thanks, Michael. You're probably asking yourself, what will Sean Penn do after ruining the Academy Awards with his Prop 8 hate speech? Well, he's out lining up his next politically pandering Oscar-seeking movie role. Yeah, it's another flick that will bomb at the box office, just like Frost Nixon and Milk. Penn is in talks to play Joe Wilson in a film based on the autobiography of Wilson's wife, the supposedly outed CIA agent Valerie Plame. The flick's titled Fair Game, and Naomi Watts, who looks like a younger, prettier version of Wilson's wife, has agreed to play Plame. You know, by the time this thing comes out in a year from now, no one's going to care about what the Bush administration did or didn't do. It'll be a year after the Obama administration gave us an $800 billion Remulus, a $400 billion budget with those 8,500 earmarks that are not supposed to be there, and $900 million given to Hamas in Gaza. So we're going to be focused on an economy that's melting down, escalating terrorist attacks. So no one will be interested in a Sean Penn flick that demonizes Scooter Libby. And by the way, if anyone is the total opposite of Sean Penn, it is Clint Eastwood. Eastwood spoke out recently about the lack of sense of humor in today's culture. He says we should be able to tell jokes about nationality without being branded a racist. Clint says that in former times, we constantly made jokes about different races, and you can only tell them today with one hand over your mouth, or you would be insulted as a racist. You know, what he said is, I don't want to be politically correct. He says we're all spending too much time and energy trying to be politically correct about everything, and no one could be more politically correct than diehard liberal rocker Sheryl Crow. Remember how this bank, Northern Trust, got $1.5 billion of our taxpayer money in bailout money? They laid off 450 workers. They flew their clients and employees to L.A. for days of posh hotel rooms, gourmet dinners.
Don't get me started.
Well, they also had some concerts. One of them was at the House of Blues, where our tax money was spent for Sheryl Crow to croon some tunes. Has Crow returned any of that tax money? Nah. She even wants more money. She's lobbying Congress to pass laws that would force radio station owners to pay musicians like her for every song they broadcast. And Ms. Crow, along with Sean Penn, Michael Moore, Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins, lots of other Hollywood stars, whine about the United States health care system, you know, the best one in the world. Well, they want us to have the Cuban style of socialized health care. But what about Hollywood style health care? Well, after 87 years, Hollywood is shutting down the Motion Picture Fund hospital and long-term living facilities that cared for aging actors, some of the most famous legends in film, but none of the wealthy multimillionaire actors have volunteered to pony up any cash to save the elderly thespians.
Well, of course not. Why should the rich Hollywood thespians give their own money when they feel that our government can pay for everything?
And speaking of rich Hollywood thespians, art will imitate life when California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger will portray himself in a new movie by Sly Stallone. Yeah, Stallone's doing the same thing again. He's writing, directing, and starring in a film. This one's about a group of mercenaries trying to overthrow a South American dictator. Now, I hope it's Hugo Chavez. The title of this movie, as the California governor, is the title is The Expendables, which is a perfect name for the entire California legislature. Oh, California citizen Leo DiCaprio is getting a rude awakening. You know, he wants to marry this incredibly attractive supermodel, Sports Illustrated cover girl, Bar Rafaeli. She's Israeli, and her father has demanded that DiCaprio convert to Judaism in order to tie the knot with his daughter. Now, DiCaprio reportedly will do it, will convert. Now the Arab world hates him. Al Arabia has been particularly vicious. Oh, by the way, that's the outfit that Barack Obama conducted his first official interview with. As a matter of fact, on the internet, an Arab admirer of DiCaprio, who was upset that his movie idol is converting to Judaism and marrying a Jewish girl, he wrote, "Isn't he the DiCaprio who voted for Barack Hussein Obama?" Well, that's all the shenanigans in Hollywood this week, Michael. Thanks again for having me on.
Thanks for the report, James. Maybe someday soon a little reality will find its way into the Hollywood liberal mindset. But I'm not holding my breath. Play rock and roll. I'm going to take a breather now. That's all. Yeah, all right. Bump and grind. Go ahead. Play bump and grind. Go ahead. Yeah, play bump and grind. Go ahead. Bump and grind with the New World Order. She's a transsexual.
Earth angel,
dance with the transsexual called the New World Order. The New World Order who has AIDS.
Love you all the time.
How do we fix this thing? It's so broken, I don't know where to begin. Play it again, will you please? Company asks consumers to throw away the pizzas. You hear? Throw away the pizza. Throw away the pizza, go ahead. Throw away the pizza. How about throwing away the illegal immigrant? Can we get rid of them at the same time? Can we finally show we're a nation again? Get rid of them and throw them out of the country? Does anybody... Turn it off now. Is anybody in charge of this country? It's going to rain again here. I'm in the West Coast. I'm not supposed to talk about weather. It's one of the rules of a national show is you can't talk about anything fun. Weather. Can't do time because it's a national show. And got a day of sun today and tomorrow sun in the Bay Area. God, the San Francisco Bay is so gorgeous. After the rain out here, the sun comes out, you could scream it's so gorgeous. You know, it's going to rain again Sunday now for another week, which is great. Because I love all winter long. Drought, drought, drought. We have the driest winter on record. Global bull, you know, global warming, blah, 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 blah. Then it rains. All of a sudden, the crybaby starts screaming, hey, it's raining too much. But it's not filling up the reservoirs. The gangsters who own the water industry are telling you, you still got to worry so they can jack you up on the price. Everything's fear, fear-driven. They're swamped on the highways, complaining about the wet, and they're still saying it's still a drought. Salmon aren't in, flying in. Salmon aren't coming in through the gate to go spawn. That's like one of the saddest stories in the history of nature. I can't understand it. It's so Buddhist. It's such a Buddhist story. The salmon is hatched up in a river, the Sacramento River. Thing swims out through miles, Sacramento River, through the Golden Gate, goes out to the sea, goes up in the blah, 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 has fun. Then it wants to have a baby. It's got to swim all the way back 3 years later so it can shoot its sperm on the egg and die. What a way to live. I guess why the French call it the petite mort. I wouldn't relate it to lox, but maybe there is a relationship between the petite mort and lox. I don't really know. But what a tragedy to spend, like, all that swimming through all of that. You know, the bears don't get you. The fishermen don't get you. The pollution doesn't get you. The toxic condoms in San Francisco Bay don't get you. And you go and you wind up all the way back up at the top of the Sacramento River and you die after you spawn. What's that all about? Why does nature do that? Can anyone understand the survival value of that? Why? I don't understand it. I told you about the woman who went crazy when I was a kid in Queens about the whole thing about why are we born to die. I mean, I don't want to bum you out. I remember as a kid it scared me because he was the doctor. Everyone lived in an attached house in one block after another. See, we're all in the same income level. In those days, even in those days, a doctor didn't make much more than a little, you know, merchant. Yeah, okay, a specialist at a hospital made a little bit more, and a manufacturer made a little bit more, but the doctor didn't make that much more. He lived around other people in the same category, in the same kind of attached house. So he had a wife and kids my age, and the wife was she went nuts, okay? I don't know how to put it. It's not funny. She cried all the time. Either she stayed in the house crying, or she came out and cried. She took people's hands, even children, and she'd say, tell me, why are we born if we have to die? Why did God give me children if they're going to die one day? You know, it's frightening to a kid to hear that. So you go to your mother and say, like, why is Mary crying about that? And your mother doesn't know what to say because she can wind up in a, you know, like a tearjerker and not know what it's all about. There was no answer to it. There's no answer to that story. You have an answer to that story? That's why we're focused on politics, to make believe that we don't care about the eternal questions. This way we can get mad at the Republicans or Nixon. You can say Nixon did it. Or you can hate the Democrats that they did it. You don't have to face your own problem. You understand this? You want to talk about everything? You know, I'm going to talk about the economy again. Who do you think I am, Sean Hannity? You think I'm that smart that I only went to high school and going to talk about the economy? You think I'm Rush Limbaugh? You think I'm up at the level of a man who went to high school? I'm not there yet. I can't get up to that level of bashing only Democrats and the Republicans are such geniuses. I'm not ready to be smart enough to carry the water for the Republican Party.
Savage.